So through the chair, the minister, later in the report, Peter has the timelines, but they did indicate that the last week of July, they will be scheduling teleconferences and meetings with every school board staff leadership team to review their plans, and that they said the week of August 4th that they will be providing clarification on the scenario or the model we'll be in, whether it's, you know, full distance learning, whether it's adaptive hybrid, or whether it's full return of service. So those are the ministry timelines.
Thank you. That's all for now.
Thank you, Trustee Danko. With that, moving along to Trustee Beek. Just a couple of questions, and again, you know, kudos to staff. I can't even imagine what this summer is like for you. So, city buses, as we know, there's quite a few students that rely on city buses. So, are we looking with the city at that scenario? Like, are there going to be students, like, are they going to increase the number of buses, or are they working to address this at all, knowing even if we have sort of half the kids coming on a given day, there's still currently a lot less seats on the bus. So I'm just wondering if we've had conversations with the city about this or.
Director Figueredo?
So thank you. I will pass this either to Peter to provide an update what conversations have happened. And maybe Stacy might have some insights as well. So I'll pass on to Peter first.
Yeah, thank you. And through the chair, what I would say to that is this is all part of the conversations and planning that transportation services are engaged in. So knowing, as Trustee Deeth has indicated, that one of the modes of transportation that our students are provided is on the HSR, and so that has required a discussion with HSR as well as taxis and other services that provide transportation as a whole. So thank you for that question.
Thank you. And my just my other question is in regards to students with special needs who we said that can attend school every day, and I'm just wondering about their EAs or their teachers, because a lot of those students require hands-on support. So is that just, I guess, are we then again just following public health, putting them in full PPE gear, or what's the discussion around managing that?
I think that discussion might be later in the report, but Executive Superintendent Sovereign.
Great, thank you. And later on in the report, we will talk about this a little bit, but my comment would be that one of the areas of focus is our students with special needs. And led by Superintendent Peggy Blair in Specialized Services, and that does include the potential additional public health protocols that would need to be put in place when working really closely with a student who may require some additional support. That wouldn't be exclusive just for students with specialized needs. But it's certainly one that Superintendent Blair, together with Superintendent Stefanian, and working with public health, are looking at.
Trustee, further comments?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Trustee Galindo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to save my questions for later in the report.
Thank you. Trustee Miller.
Hi, just a couple of questions. My first one, again, is about transportation. I just wanted a little bit of clarity, and I can wait if it will be highlighted later. But What about our French immersion families? And I know that a lot of, I know we saw the French immersion numbers before we technically left session. And I'm just wondering how we're going to manage that when I know that a lot of families, the busing is integral for their children to attend at all. But then also we, I think it was mentioned, you know, multiple children across potentially multiple different schools. So I can appreciate that. If that's coming later, then I'm happy to wait for that. But otherwise, if we could have some clarity around that.
Executive Superintendent Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, what I will say briefly now is that the complexities of transportation are, you know, one of the several pieces that teams are working very hard at doing all of the planning. And regardless of which program students may be in, if they're eligible for transportation, then Transportation Services right now is looking at doing the planning in terms of providing that transportation opportunity. So working first from if you're eligible for transportation, then let's plan towards it. Then we move to cohorting in terms of planning if we needed to move into scenario B. And then understanding which families may be choosing not to have their child use the board-provided transportation, as well those families who may be completely opting out at this time for in-person schooling. So all of those variables cascade as part of the planning process. But to your question, if it's a French immersion program or any other program, if a student is eligible for board-provided transportation, then they would be considered in the planning process.
Trustee?
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And then my other question is just, I know that assuming we're going into some version of what's looking at likely like a hybrid model where we have two different cohorts going on, I know that we did have respondents, parents say that they would be, you know, I think it was something like a quarter of parents potentially would be holding their child back and not enrolling them and opting for 100% distance ed. Has the ministry given us any sense of whether or not an option were on the table would be getting entirely separate staff for that portion of education delivery? So what I'm imagining here is because in-classroom teachers will have essentially two smaller classes to deal with every single, you know, or one version every single day. From a labor point of view, from a stress and just a work manageability point of view, do we have any funding available for, you know, hiring other teachers to be 100% distance education teachers who could manage the workload with our families that are opting in for health or for other reasons to do the 100% distance learning?
Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, I'll respond first by just taking trustees back to 4-1 in your package and the second paragraph from the bottom around voluntary attendance. The ministry has provided the direction that if in-person attendance is not preferred under the circumstances, that remote learning would continue where possible. This would continue within the current structure of the assigned class and teachers. Why we believe that that's very important to note is that in all of the planning with the various scenarios, the teams have not engaged in planning for an entire year in one mode. But as the ministry has directed, we do need to be prepared, given the public health circumstance, to move into different scenarios at different times of the year. The reason why that's important to note is classes have been assigned by schools in the regular manner earlier this spring. Students will have an assigned class in elementary. They will have courses that they're in and particular classes in secondary school with connected to teachers. If the school year were to begin, let's say, in scenario A and then needed to be shifted to scenario B and then potentially back to A and then into C, our planning is trying to keep classes and students and teachers together as best as possible. So later in the report, you will see that we do comment on whether or not students are learning remotely because of choice or whether they're learning remotely because that's not the day that their cohort would be in person in school. We're working towards a blended integrated model where, let's say, a grade one class of 20 students would begin the school year together and would go through potentially the various scenarios together throughout the school year.
Trustee Felix, Maria Felix Miller.
Thank you. I appreciate the need for, you know, a sense of stability for our students, particularly with how unstable the previous academic year turned out to be. But I'm just also very concerned at the stability for the teachers themselves, managing two separate groups, assuming we're in, even if we go from, you know, even if we're in option A come September, ultimately there are going to be, however small a percentage of families who for health reasons or extended family reasons will not be with us in our buildings, but will still need, distance learning materials, distance learning check-ins, tech support, mental health support, you know. So I guess my question here is, how do we support both the educator who is running their classroom, who has their own family and also has their, you know, these two, has the potential for many scenarios throughout the year, and how do we make sure that the distance learning that also needs continuity and clarity with its delivery. I'm just wondering, I'm worried that in the A and B scenarios, because C is going to essentially happen for even a small percentage of the population, whether or not that's feasible for a single educator to do it the way that the ministry has sort of outlined.
And I'm going to pass this over to the director. It's important to note, though, that as of today, there was communication that the province might be fully reopening by September. So we're waiting for further details, but we absolutely need to explore all these options. But, director?
So thank you, through the chair, and thank you, Maria, for the question. You heard Peter say that's the guiding principle we're working from is to try to have the educator and students stay connected. Then we talked about, until we actually have the numbers, what's the reality going to look like on the ground if we are in an adaptive model and the teacher, as you described, has to manage cohort A on one day, cohort B the next day, and potentially students who are cohort C who are at home. We asked the ministry, will there be extra funding if we're finding it's not manageable and the educator cannot manage that flow? And the answer right now is no. We also were indicated that there's also a belief that there will be some staff that are immune compromised that might not be able to return to work, legitimately can't return to work into the physical space, but can continue remote learning, and then there would potentially be staff there that could help maybe manage that cohort at home. One of the implications for that we've indicated to the ministry is that then we would need provincial discussions with provincial unions, because that would mean we would be we'd be changing an educator or teacher's assignment for that duration, because it's not the class that they were assigned to. So to answer your question, the trustees have passed a motion that allow for some of our contingency for COVID-19 implementation for one-time funding. And the ministries believe that if we can't manage with the same teacher, that that's an option to consider. We had indicated that we do have concerns, and that if not, will there be some extra funding that would require us to look at hiring occasional teachers on a consistent basis. We're going to start with that ideal premises first as we get the numbers and see how it acts, but we are also advocating what the reality might look like. It might be more challenging to implement. So that's where we're at this point in time. And we'll have to use the current funding we have is what we've been directed at this point.
Trustee Miller?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that response. I'm glad that the conversations are happening, and I do think we will have to have that conversation at the provincial level, but I appreciate the care that everyone is taking with this. So those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Trustee Mulholland. Trustee Mulholland, are you with us? Hearing none. Moving along to Trustee Pagan Miller.
Okay. Thanks, Peter, for all your hard work. I really appreciate the flexibility, because I know in my own area that there are parents who don't feel comfortable taking their kids to school. So I like the flexibility, and I can see Maria's point that it will also bring other complications, of course, which dovetails on the next question, which is how will we work with our unions and employee groups to resolve concerns over the collective agreement, as these legally binding agreements and relationships are extremely important.
I'll go to Director Figueredo.
Thank you for Trustee Pagan Miller's question. I'll ask Peter to answer that, because I know we've begun the conversations with our local unions, in addition to what CODE has asked the province to discuss at the provincial level as well. But I'll pass to Peter.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair, actually in the next section, so I'll just give a sneak preview under our input and consultation. And on page 4-2, I do highlight that we have had and continue to have ongoing meetings with all of our employee groups. We have extended an invitation to either join us at working tables or set up separate times where we can gather the input and work through this together. As Trustee Pagan Miller has very accurately described, being able to work through this with each of our employee groups is vital, and that's why we've included it in terms of our input and our consultation. And you will see later on in the report, when we get into elementary and secondary models that we're considering for Scenario B, each one of the ones that we are providing this evening by way of an update are tentative, because we do realize that we still need to have further conversations and refine the models so that they either are adhering to the collective agreements or There's a mutual understanding of how they might work outside of the collective agreements, and all at the same time, conversations are continuing at the provincial level. So we are working with our employee groups. We are planning. All of our plans are to stay within the current collective agreements. If we run into a barrier with that, that's when we will have to, you know, bring it forward. And whether it's a central issue or a local issue, we will work through it. But I'm very pleased to say that, you know, we've been having the ongoing meetings with our employee groups, and some have been working side by side in our ad hoc committees with us as well.
That's great. Okay.
Moving along to, I don't think we have Trustee Tut. Do we have Trustee Ahona Medi, Student Trustee Ahona Medi, back on the line? Not yet. So with that, I will also save my comments for later on. So we'll continue to move through the presentation. Director Figueredo?
Yes, well, thank you. I'll pass it back into Peter to the second part of the report.
Great. Thank you, Director. And through the chair, back on page 4-2, under the heading Input and Consultation, as I've just referred, we have been working with our employee groups. But in addition to that, trustees will recall that at the previous information session, we did share preliminary results from a parent, guardian, and caregiver survey that we did issue in the last week in June, as well as some preliminary findings from a thought exchange done with our teaching staff as well during the last week in June. In addition to this, we have been meeting regularly with the Co-Terminus Board, including the Transportation Governance Committee, in an effort to find ways to, as best as possible, to align practices, and especially where we do share a commonality in transportation. I'll just highlight very quickly for trustees, provided in Appendix A is the complete parent, guardian, and caregiver survey that was conducted. The preliminary results that were shared a few weeks ago at the information session haven't changed. There were still just over 10,000 responses. The vast majority of those that responded did indicate that they were planning to send their child to school upon reopening. A small number did indicate that transportation would be a limitation if it weren't to be provided. Again, the feedback from the parent, guardian, caregiver survey did show a preference for an alternate day model at elementary versus an alternate week model, as those were the two options that the ministry had asked us to consider when it did come to a scenario B. And for secondary schools that there was a preference towards all students, grades 9 through 12, having some opportunity to have face-to-face learning occur rather than just limited to, let's say, grades 9 and 10, where grades 11 and 12, students taking grade 11 and 12 courses would just work entirely remotely. And those are for the adaptive models or scenario B. The last paragraph on page 4-2 just provides a high level of the analysis that is still ongoing with our thought exchange that we've gathered from our teaching staff. I will say in general that The themes or issues that we heard through the thought exchange are quite similar to those that our labor partners have expressed. So overall safety and well-being of staff, which we've heard this evening as well, workload and supports for each one of the scenarios that are presented. And again, we've heard that and we're taking that into account in our planning. As well, certainly concern over individual circumstances of personal caregiving. Should the adaptive scenario, scenario B, be required, as it is, you know, quite frankly, quite disruptive. There's no other way of putting it. I'll ask trustees to turn to page 4-3. On this page, and I will just hit the high level highlights here, and invite you to, look at the more specific details, but here is an outline of the enhanced public health protocols that the teams are currently working on, collaborating with Hamilton Public Health, and it's worth noting that this is for scenarios A and B, so unless there is full remote learning, scenarios A and B would have these enhanced public health protocols being put in place. The next paragraph highlights really the three fundamental processes that are included in these health, these enhanced public health protocols. The first involves screening for both student and staff, so processes are being established for that. The second is hand hygiene and respiratory etiquette. And the third is around different aspects of physical distancing, which could include visual signage so that individuals would know where to stand so that they are 2 meters apart. And it would also include physical barriers such as plexiglass in offices and potentially other areas of school buildings. The next paragraph talks about cohorting, and cohorting is something that is referred to a lot throughout our discussions, and particularly when we look at scenario B, there's a requirement to have cohorting. And the advice of Hamilton Public Health has been very consistent. In fact, we met with them just earlier today as well, together with the Coterminous Board. And the recommendation is when there is a requirement for cohorting, whether it's in designing scenario B, or if there is a student or staff member that might test positive for the illness, that maintaining cohorts of one, students staying within one cohort of a limited number of students, and as much as possible with a limited number of teachers, that would be their advice and preference for a variety of reasons, including, you know, contact tracing and overall to mitigate and reduce the potential spread of COVID-19. At the bottom of page 4-3, you will find a fairly substantive list of different aspects of the enhanced public health protocols, again, that the teams are working very diligently on. These continue on to page 4-4, and I won't go into each one of them. Certainly, if there are questions, either myself or Superintendent Stefania would be happy to address them. but you will see that there are a number of procedures that vary from limiting those that would come into school right into personal protective equipment or PPE and when it would be appropriate for those to be utilized. I will highlight one point for trustees that I believe is worthy to note, and that is second from the bottom, cleaning and sanitizing, and that the board already uses hospital-grade disinfectant cleaner as part of the regular cleaning protocol. And so you will not hear us talk about providing a deep cleaning anymore, but we will talk about cleaning and sanitizing. And the reason for that is that, you know, through our work with public health, we have noted that with the hospital-grade disinfectant cleaner that's used and the processes that are already in place, that a real focus would be on the frequent cleaning of high touch points on a regular basis and other measures such as reducing or eliminating or, if possible, the sharing of items. Those would be factors that would be considered by public health to be critical and that we're doing already in terms of the cleaning and the sanitizing process. I'll turn to page 4-4. As we were speaking about transportation earlier, you'll note that the first nugget on 4-4 does talk about transportation, cleaning protocols, and physical distancing, which is all part of the enhanced protocols. And again, whether it's scenario A or B, that would be in place. I will then turn trustees' attention to the section on mental health and well-being supports. Appendix C gives you an example of many of those supports and programs that are currently under development and either being offered already this summer or will be ready to be offered as we reopen and ongoing from there. A very critical piece will be providing those ongoing supports for our students in terms of their mental health and well-being. The timelines, as the director referred to earlier, are listed here. There is a bit of a sense of urgency in terms of completing the planning of the scenarios simply because we not only have to have many of these pieces in place as one often depends on the other, but also that the expectation from the ministry is that following ongoing reviews with Hamilton Public Health, that we would have a review done with the Ministry of Education. There was an earlier question from a trustee around what the turnaround might be. The ministry hasn't indicated that there would be a full submission and then a period of time where they would turn it around. It is a dialogue with the ministry towards the end of July. That's the time frame they've given us, and they'll provide us feedback on each one of our scenarios. During the on July the 27th at the next special board meeting, our plan is to bring forward another report on school reopening, where we would have plans more fully developed and finalized to update trustees. And again, as I referred to earlier, refining some of the points that we know already that need to have some additional work done in terms of meeting either collective agreements or require additional feedback from public health. On August 4th, approximately August 4th, the Ministry of Education has indicated that they would be indicating the scenario for the start of the school year. So with the review of all of our plans towards the end of July, on or about August the 4th, we're expecting a formal announcement from the Ministry of Education around the scenario. We, again, are planning with all scenarios in mind, and whether we begin with scenario A or scenario B, what's important to note, again, is the interchangeability throughout the year. And with that, I'm going to walk through the elementary schools description and then the secondary schools, and then take questions at the end, if that's okay with you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
So on 4-4 in elementary schools, and we've made reference to this earlier this evening, each one of the scenarios, predominantly the work has been, again, around scenario B, which is the adaptive model with limitations on class sizes per day to 15 students and the cohorting of students. These plans have all been developed really with the view to minimize the disruption to the regular school day routine as much as possible. In the second paragraph, at the bottom of 4-4, trustees will note that as planning in elementary schools for cohorting has begun, through the work of our IIT departments, we are looking to cohort students that reside in the same household, that would be together with other family members within the household and siblings, irrespective of whether or not they attend the same schools. And so you may appreciate the complexity involved in, you know, establishing a cohort A and a cohort B, not only within a school and within grades, but across our entire system, so that families who have more than one child, or there's more than one child from a household that may attend different schools, are not attending on different days because they are in assigned to a different cohort. So that necessary work has already begun, as again, it is fairly complex to be able to do that. In each one of these scenarios, and as described in this paragraph, we already know that there will be exceptions, and that each exception will need to be reviewed carefully, that the number 15 of students per class will vary from class to class, from school to school. It will depend on whether it's a primary class, whether it's a junior or an intermediate class. So all these will be taken into consideration. But each student that is currently enrolled within HWDSB in our elementary schools will be placed into a cohort for these purposes, and then we will look at each one of the potential individual circumstances. In the report, we do want to note that once we move into potential implementation of scenario B, the adaptive model with cohorting, there may be times where the number of students that would actively be attending school in person would make up a cohort in and of itself. And so there may be times where they wouldn't be separated because the entirety of the class would make up the cohort, in which case they would likely attend on a day-to-day, each-day basis. So we just wanted to make that note because we already understand that with implementation, it is not going to be as clean as 15 and 15 A and B everywhere, every class for each school. I'll take trustees to page 4-5. The first full paragraph there, beginning with in reviewing, input from the parent, guardian, and caregiver survey, as well as our ongoing work with Hamilton Public Health, has led us to develop models for scenario B focused on alternate days rather than alternate weeks. And Appendix D will show two models for this scenario. Both of the models follow an alternate day, however, designed slightly differently. The reason why at this time, and again, a reminder that we are still working with our employee groups see whether or not there are any implications for these particular models as laid out. But at this time, we're working towards recommending a model that is alternate day that is consistent with what we've used in the past when we had alternate day kindergarten attendance before FDK was implemented. So a student would attend on, if they were in cohort A, would attend on Monday and Wednesday and alternate Fridays. And if the student was in cohort B, they would attend on Tuesday and Thursday and the alternate Fridays. Again, in the next paragraph, we do indicate that currently our planning is that students who do not attend in person and would continue with remote learning would still be part of the current class, and our blended approach would continue utilizing the board's standardized digital learning tools, which are the Hub and MS Teams. The last two paragraphs in the section on elementary schools really highlight the fact that we've never done this before. Nobody's done this before in that we're aware of, certainly in our province, and that, in terms of moving forward, we need to work together with as many partners as we can, with our employee groups, to listen carefully and recognize that each of the scenarios as implemented may impact whether it's students or staff and their families in very different ways. And our commitment is really to continue to listen, to gather feedback, and when possible, to make those changes that will assist anyone who is experiencing additional challenges because of this. It's not easy to say that this will be complicated and difficult because in some ways that sounds overly simplistic. And so what we did want to highlight is that as part of our planning, we anticipate and know that challenges will arise and that we need to build in mechanisms to address them. I'm going to move us through secondary schools, still on page 4.4-5, in the same in the same way, secondary school planning is underway, and looking at cohorting is also something that is being planned. I will note that for elementary schools, sorry to go back to elementary schools for a minute, but in contrast to secondary schools, our beginning and end times for elementary schools, our planning is that we would keep them the same. Bell times to start and end the day would be the same, facilitating transportation and providing as much of a regular routine as possible. For secondary schools, we recognize through our early planning that while we can keep the entry times the same, again, to facilitate transportation and to maintain those routines, that it may be necessary to change dismissal times, which I'll explain in a moment, and or end times. And that's simply because of the way that secondary school courses are structured differently than elementary school would be outlined. The last paragraph on 4-5 highlights the fact that we have been looking at models for scenario B in secondary for some time, consulting with public health and working closely with colleagues and other school boards, and as well have had feedback from our employee groups on this. And each one of the models for scenario B in secondary school has fairly significant implications. The most significant is that most of the models in secondary school would require either a change to the school year calendar, or they would also require that the model start with the beginning of the semester or the beginning of the school year and be carried out throughout the semester and or the school year. So just to be clear, our view has always been that we want to develop models where, regardless of the scenario, students can continue as best as possible to have a regular routine, and that if we need to move from scenario to scenario, that it can be done, again, with the least amount of disruption possible. In looking at secondary school models, the one that we are currently recommending, although we know still needs some work in terms of the actual minutes in a day, and that's something we are committed to working on very closely with our employee groups on. The model which we're calling the rotation model, that's in Appendix E, would allow us to move into that particular model at any point throughout a semester up to, we're saying here, approximately 4 days before the end of the semester. That's how flexible that particular model can be. There are trade-offs, of course, and that is that students would only be face-to-face in school on alternate days for half the day, with a dismissal after the first half of the day, and transportation provided still at the end of the day, with the ability for those who would be taking transportation to stay within the school to continue their remote learning from the school location. We'll say right up front, not ideal. None of the scenarios that, none of the models within scenario B that we have explored ourselves or with colleagues across other districts are in any way ideal. But this particular model, we believe, does meet that criteria of minimizing disruption and providing more flexibility. The other models, one of which we've included for your review in the appendix, is one that is referred to a quad mestering model. And simply put, it's taking the current structure of our semesters, four courses in a semester, and having students either focus on one course for a period of time and then completing that and then starting the next, or as in the model that we've provided for illustrative purposes here, students taking two courses at a time, one in the morning and then one in the afternoon, again, completing that halfway through the semester and then starting the third and fourth course that they would normally be taking this semester. One of the most significant challenges with that particular model is that it must be started at the beginning of the school year, at the beginning of the semester, and carried out for the entire semester. Absent of knowing right now the direction which the ministry will provide in terms of how to start the school year, should we be instructed to start the school year in scenario A, our preference would be to start our school year with the timetables that have already been prepared for students, students taking their four courses the way they normally would in a semester, as opposed to shifting to this this quad-mestered model. Because of the way that the semester and the year unfolds, in order for students to have the required amount of time in each particular course, those types of models would require them to start at the beginning of the semester. I'll stop there on the models and turn to page 4.6. And just note that at the top of 4-6, any scenario B that we would have to move into in secondary school would mean that it would have to be carried out for the remainder of the semester, even if we were to switch back into scenario A or have to switch into scenario C. The model of scenario B, once started, would need to be completed. The advantage, we believe, with the rotation model that we have designed is that if we were to start the school year, let's say, in scenario A, which is the full return, taking all your courses, that could continue until such time if it were necessary to move into scenario B, and then we would just finish the semester off in scenario B. Last point on the various models is the advice that we have been provided by public health, and again, right up until earlier today, and that is to, when cohorting students, to keep students within one cohort would be their strongest advice. They recognize that operationally that may not be necessarily feasible. But their advice is stay within a cohort. And then if students needed to switch from one cohort to another, as they would in our rotation model as they move in their face-to-face from one course to the next after a certain amount of days, but their recommendation is that there be a period of time when students are not face-to-face with any cohort, and the period of time that we've indicated here based on their advice would be 5 school days. Those discussions continue, and, you know, that may change, as we've already talked about earlier this evening. As new information comes forward each and every day, we adjust. What's in front of trustees right now is based on our very current understanding and consultations with public health in terms of these scenarios. The last two paragraphs in under 4-6 for secondary schools, again, really just highlight the fact that similar to elementary, a blended learning approach would continue. We're working towards planning on students who are assigned into a class will continue with that class, whether they're learning in a face-to-face mode or remotely. Students who are engaged in an e-learning course would be entirely learning remotely. That differs from those students who are assigned into a face-to-face course, in which case, if they are choosing not to come in person and working remotely, or on those days where their cohort is not in school in person, they would still continue on in that course with their classmates and with the particular teacher. And certainly, again, it goes without saying that in secondary schools like elementary schools, there will be challenges, and our commitment is, again, to listen and to be open to the feedback and to look and to endeavor to resolve problems when and if we can in the best way we can. The last section, childcare and before and after school programs, there's really just a small section here to illustrate to trustees our ongoing work with our partners. This is yet another stream that is being looked at and planned in collaboration with partners. And as is highlighted here, for before and after school, the attempt is to match up the cohorting as best as possible, and to put in the those additional measures around physical distancing. But just know that for both childcare and before and after school, appreciating the integration that needs to be done there as well. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to turn it back to you to see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Associate Director. And can you just clarify, will this be the last opportunity then for our trustees to provide comments? Because I think you've gone through, you went through all the appendices now. So this will be the last, this will be the end of the discussion, correct?
I've completed the report, yes.
Thank you. So with that, I am going to turn to roll call. Trustees, if there's anything specifically that you wanted to state, now would be the time to do so. And we'll start with Trustee Archer.
That's a long report, but very informative. And I don't have any questions. All my questions I had were answered, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving along to Trustee Bingham.
Yes, I have quite a few questions. I'm overwhelmed with everything. My hat's off to everybody who is involved and what they have to do with all of this. This is incredible. And if I'm overwhelmed, I can't imagine what the families are going to be feeling like at this point. My first question is, if the province ends up being completely opened, as somebody had mentioned, by September, then is all of this for naught, or are we going to be able to keep going with at least part of the remote learning as well, so that families who have decided they're too nervous to send their kids to school be able to keep them at home and continue on with their lessons in that? I guess that's my first question.
And I'll turn this right over to Associate Director Sovereign, but I'll just state that